Chapter 18. The Wedge. The celebration commenced with the grand entrance of the Blessed One, Saviour of Kihal, Mikix Bane, and the Master and Uniter of the Nations. Trumpets blew, praises were sung, and knees bent in his honour as he strutted slowly to the table at the head of the hall, waving energetically to the cheering nobles and warlords. He wore a white shirt bedecked with lace, tailored to give his ample gut room to hang over his black pants. A red sash accented the ensemble, lending his face a more sanguine appearance than the corpse-white colour it had seemed at the docks. His lips were bulbous and curled, affixing his countenance with a permanent, arrogant sneer. Fat rimmed or engorged the fine features of his face, lending normal eyes a beady appearance. In the Shalane's estimation, he possessed but one kingly attribute, a deep, commanding voice that carried everywhere. After a short speech about not wanting to delay the proceedings with a speech, he sat down, put his arm around the Shalane, and tugged her roughly to him to thunderous applause. The Shalane bore it patiently, grateful for the swarm of servants swooping into the room, distracting Shaitan from his attentions to her with platters laden with steaming pheasant, pork, ripe fruit, and a wide range of breads, cheeses, and wines to satisfy every taste. Steamed and spiced fish brought in last accented the head table with the bright colours of purple, blue, and yellow. After those at the dais were served, and Shaitan was oblivious to everything but food, the servants descended to the main floor and then ascended to the balconies to deliver the meal and satisfy the demands of the jovial crowd. Once the servants had set every table, the court bard, Shemus, ascended the dais. The middle-aged performer sported long dark hair braided together into a ponytail that dropped halfway down his back. Once skinny, his position in the First Mother's Court had puffed him up around the midsection of his festive yellow tunic and green hose. He bowed, a grand smile playing across his tall face. Shaitan appeared genuinely excited to see the bard and stopped eating in anticipation. The Shalane knew Shemus's pride had recently been stung by the appointment of a Tolnorian bard, Jeff, for the duty of recording her and the Ha'ulric's journey to Elder Luri Mora.
"Ladies and gentlemen," Shemus said loudly, but the noise of the crowd continued on unabated. "Lords and ladies, your attention, please."
Still they ignored him.
"Hey!" Shaitan bellowed, coming to his feet. "Everybody shut up! The bard's trying to do something here!"
Immediate silence fell, with several half-said apologies punctuating the silence. Shemus executed a bow to Shaitan.
"Thank you, Your Grace. Tonight we have a special treat for your amusement and delight. The Black Quill playwrights from the Free City of Tenswater have agreed to come and perform a little play for you, which I think you will all agree is most suited to our little celebration this evening. Without further ado, the Black Quill playwrights!"
Shemus stepped away, and a tall man of medium build and sandy blonde hair walked regally onto the stage. He was dressed in kingly fashion, a purple robe over a deep red tunic and black pants cinched with an ornate belt. He launched into a song, identifying himself as Shaitan and explaining his role in the prophecy. Next came a woman in a dress and veil. She stood by Shaitan and sang about her role as the Shalane. Lastly, the Ilk romped into the room, and of all the portrayals the Shalane had seen of her arch-enemy, and she had seen many, this one frightened her the most. The costume consisted of what appeared to be the carcass of some enormous black dog or wolf, black glassy eyes punctuated in the centre with a red jewel. Fangs streaked with blood clacked as the jaws snapped up and down. The actor, wearing similarly stained claws on his hands, howled, jumped, and cavorted menacingly. The play proceeded as most of the others the Shalane had viewed. The counterparts to Shaitan and herself met, courted, fell in love, and were married. The Shalane had to admit, however, that the singing and dancing were first-rate and better than any she had attended previously. Shaitan was so enthralled that the Shalane wagered she could club him with a drumstick of pheasant, and he wouldn't even know it.
"And now," the brightly dressed narrator said after a touching, worshipful melody that the Shalane had sung to the child in her belly The babe has grown large in her womb, and together, hand in hand, the Ha'uruk and the Shalane arrive on the field of battle. Triss shines bright in the sky. The hordes of Mikik stand before them, but they swallow their fear. The time has come for them to shine forth and bring God into the world.
He threw something on the ground, and a great puff of smoke rose with a loud pop, startling everyone. Shatan clapped as several actors dressed as scaly Uyumak with colour-changing scales leapt onto the stage, cartwheeling, flipping, and juggling knives, torches, and soldiers' helmets to a pounding rhythm. At the height of their erratic dance, the actors portraying Shatan and the Shalane marched confidently onto the stage and into the middle of the chaos. Shatan held aloft a sword painted white, and with a powerful song, supplicating for divine help, he stepped from Uyumak to Uyumak, striking them down. As he finished off the last, the Ilk jumped to the stage, blood dripping from his fur and fangs. The beat of the drum increased in pace and intensity as the actors danced about in a deadly fight, while the actress portraying the Shalane lay behind in the throes of childbirth. The fight was frenetic and tense, ending as the sword finally penetrated the breast of the shrieking Ilk. At the same moment, the child was born, the actor Shatan lifting it high above his head and presenting it to the crowd while shouting, "God is born! God is born! God is born!" Thunderous applause filled the hall, and the actors bowed for several minutes before leaving. Unfortunately for the real Shalane, their departure left her the centre of Shatan's attention for the rest of the affair. For most of her life, the Shalane had cursed the need to wear the veil that prevented her from seeing the world as other women did. Meals, especially public ones, were particularly awkward, for her handmaidens had to hold the veil away from her head so that she could scoop food into her mouth or take a drink, while every man in the room watched, hoping for the smallest glimpse of her face. The Shalane relished the time she spent alone in her room, for there she could remove all the trappings and pretenses that separated her from the rest of her sex and her race, making her feel so different and so alone. But after another hour with Shatan, she was glad her face remained obscured behind the light mesh, for she would not want anyone to guess the despair or disgust that played plainly across her features. The thought of the Blessed One and her forthcoming marriage to him had filled her childhood and adolescence with many wild and pleasant fantasies and longings, and every minute she spent with Shatan destroyed them ruthlessly one by one. Instead of handsomeness was unkempt sloppiness. Instead of dignity and honour was baseness and crudeness. Instead of temperance there was indulgence and selfishness. There was cunning intelligence, however, and the hint of it in his eyes frightened her. The aristocrats and nobles before her sometimes ascended the dais to pay their obsequious respects to her and to him, unable to see through years of ingrained deference to them that something was amiss. The Shalane knew her mother sorrowed for her, though the Shalane still felt angry that her mother never told her of her husband-to-be's character. She had no doubt that Jaren also seethed to see her treated so. Anyone who considered her situation with a mind not blinded by station or favour would conclude that the Blessed One regarded her as little more than a tavern wench. Throughout the evening he poured her until her white dress, already stained by his dogs, was a smear of grease and crumbs. He leered at her suggestively and told her jokes so bawdy that she imagined, while acknowledging her own inexperience, that even a seasoned soldier would blush to hear them. In self-defence, she stopped eating, not that she possessed much of an appetite to start with, and tried to cover herself and shrink into as small a target as possible. Luckily, when the servants served dessert, an artful white cake decorated with vines of green and blue frosting, the Blessed One left her alone for a few moments. To take her mind off her discomforts and distress, she studied the room and the celebrants. The great hall of Mikmir was tiled and columned with a white marble suffused with a blush of red, quarried and hauled with great toil from the northern tip of the Ironheart Mountains before the shattering. The light coloration of the rock brightened the room, the candlelight flooding down from the chandeliers, creating a cheery atmosphere. Above the main floor were arched balconies accessible by elegant, curving stairways. The balconies were usually reserved for dancing and mingling, but due to the great number of nobles and warlords who came to see the Blessed One and his future bride, a host of servants had earlier hauled heavy tables and chairs up the stairs so those of station insufficient to merit a seat on the floor could still attend. All eyes and all talk focused on the dais at the head of the room, where Chatan and the Shalane sat in the middle of a long, finely appointed table. At one end of the table stood Jaren, jaw set and hands behind his back, and because the Shalane knew him well, she could tell that his calm face masked a gnawing anger. She hoped, for his sake, that he would hold his tongue lest he run afoul of the Blessed One's personal bodyguard, Cormith. Cormith stood opposite Jaren, uninterested in the entire affair and showing every bit of the boredom he felt. Cormith, Dayson had told her earlier, was a perfectly built fighter. He was widely recognized as the second-best swordsman in Kihal, second only to Shadan Cairn. Most everyone knew better than to cross the Blessed One in any of his ways, for the one who did would find his head on the floor. Cormith was bald, and his body was tattooed with patterns of black dots that some speculated were emblems of a covenant with dark powers. Others said he tattooed one dot on his skin for every person he killed. The Shalane shuddered as he set his heavy-lidded gaze upon her, and she turned away. Close by, at the left base of the dais, the six young men who recently merited the privilege of training to join her dark guard surveyed the proceedings. Each wore a black, high-collared shirt and a dark coat embroidered with silver moons. The Shalane knew their masters had awarded them their swords and uniforms in a ceremony earlier that morning, and each wore them proudly. While not yet permitted to eat, they enjoyed the attention they received, and despite being on duty, some talked excitedly to each other or to relatives and friends who passed by. The Shalane smiled at their budding arrogance and bravado, displayed to good effect to the young ladies, displayed by all, except one. And when she saw him, she recognized him immediately as Jen, the one Fenner had brimmed about ceaselessly after the trials. Unlike the others, his copiously scarred face remained an emotionless blank. In fact, he hardly moved. The Shalane couldn't decide whether he was soaking up every detail, as Jaren would do, or if he was lost in thought, oblivious to the celebration around him. Indeed, the longer she watched him, the more his stoicism and discipline fascinated her. Only statues stood so still, or looked so poised, and only a dead man could have a face so devoid of expression. A chill pricked her skin, a feeling that he knew she was regarding him, and she quickly turned her gaze elsewhere. The dark guard stood on the opposite end of the dais from their apprentices, and she decided that Jen must be imitating them as a good apprentice should. They, too, stood still and calm. None could match Jen for sheer control, if that's what it was. Tolbrook shot menacing looks at the young, court-bred ladies that stopped to talk to the new apprentices, though to little effect. The Blessed One ended her observations.
"Well, Shalane,"
he said loudly, wiping frosting from his hand onto her sleeve as he wrapped a puffy hand around her arm.
"What do you say we retire a bit early, and I get a look under that veil of yours? We can return later if you wish it."
It wasn't a request, but an expectation. The Shalane, horrified, found her mouth open but empty of words. Thankfully, the arrival of Dayson gave her an excuse to ignore the question. "Milady," he said, bowing deeply, "I beg your leave to stand by Jaren, if it pleases you." Dayson had dressed as a courtier rather than a soldier this night, handsome in a deep golden coat worn over a blue shirt and hose.
"It pleases me. Take your place, Dayson."
"You have two bodyguards, then?" the Blessed One commented derisively. "All I need is Cormith. I swear the man never sleeps a wink, which isn't to say he won't leave us alone when the need presents itself."
He gave her thigh a firm squeeze, and she fought down the urge to yell.
"You know," he joked, "the sooner we get this child born, the better. Should I put it to a vote?"
The last was said through a mouthful of pheasant, and by his expectant gaze to the crowd, the Shalane thought he might actually stop the proceedings and ask for a raise of hands to validate his wishes.
"I think not,"
the Shalane replied, struggling to control her voice. Several close to the dais were already staring at them and listening.
"We shall be upright as the church commands, lest we spoil the prophecy and bring down the wrath of Eldaloth upon us and the doom of Kihal with it. We are to be married in Elder Lurimora, and the child conceived in the light of the moon Triss. Any other course will lead to ruin.
The Blessed One laughed.
I'm sure if Eldaloth were going to strike me down for being with a woman, he would have done so long ago. I'm more married to you than I was to any of the others. Besides, prophecy says we will be together. Does it really matter if it's sooner than later? If the child is to be conceived under the light of Triss, then I'm sure it won't be conceived until then. You will come with me.
The Shalane knew her beauty could pull powerfully on men, but this man had never seen her face. What lust was his came from lewd habits and a lifetime of overindulgence.
You've obviously thought this through, and I know women are slaves in your country, but I am not your slave, and I will not,
the Blessed One cut her off, tightening his grip on her arm and yanking her close to him.
You will,
he whispered intently, coming to his feet.
You will, woman, because I desire it.
He dragged her upward from her chair and pulled her toward the door that led out to the hall to his apartments. The Shalane turned toward the crowd, time slowing as if to allow her to take in the scene around her. Her mother bowed her head and closed her eyes in an agony and shame she seemed to have expected. Jaren's knuckles turned white from clenching his sword hilt as he walked forward to follow her. Dacen glanced off into the assembly, pretending not to notice. Cormyth fell in behind his master, a grin splitting his face. Some of the assembled in the crowd noticed them leaving, but they either did not think anything was wrong or did not care. She resisted as best she could, without causing a scene, but he was strong, and he was the Ha'ulric. Slowly the inevitable enveloped her, and her resistance eroded to submission and pain. Tears ran freely from her eyes as the Blessed One dragged her out to deliver the unthinkable, final blow to a lifetime of naive anticipation. Dream after dream of their wedding and their wedding night sprinted through her mind. He was so handsome in the dreams. He was a gentleman. He held her hand lightly as they danced in a hall filled with women jealous of his touch upon her. But his eyes were only for her, and hers for him. Now her eyes darted everywhere before returning to the floor in front of her.
Let her be!
The voice was loud, and the Blessed One faltered but pressed on.
Let her be!
This time the words cut through the noise of the crowd like thunder and demanded acknowledgement. All fell silent, and the Blessed One turned, naked rage rising in his face. The Shalane also turned, wondering who would dare stand for her. Mounting the dais, slowly and calmly, was Jen, face relaxed, even bored. The Blessed One released the Shalane as if she were no longer important, and she fled to stand hand in hand with her mother. Jaren and Dacen quickly flanked the Shalane, and the rest of the celebrants froze in disbelief.
Let her be,
the Blessed One said evenly, but angrily.
What right have you to order me? I am the law.
You are not the law,
Jen returned, not the least bit intimidated.
The prophecy says the Blessed One would speak the law, which is far different from inventing laws to satisfy your own lusts.
And shame, Jen continued with a sudden fervency, turning his head to include the entire room.
On this company, for letting you abuse the Shalane in this fashion for the entire evening. I will not stand for it any longer.
Rage muted the Blessed One's tongue, and many nobles who had spent the night currying favour with him twitched with outrage and demanded Jen's head. Others, the Shalane noticed gratefully, sat quietly and considered.
I have recently accepted the charge to protect the honour and life of the Shalane,
Jen continued, his voice rich and forceful.
The church includes the chastity of maidens as essential to their honour, even in your country, and you clearly wish to violate that doctrine. I demand honour be satisfied by combat, as is my right in Rugoth.
The crowd gasped and whispered frantically. A glint bloomed in Cormyth's eye, and he started to stretch and loosen his muscles. A chill ran up the Shalane's spine. The great hall of Mikmere was large, but Jen filled it with an honest presence and power she had never seen anyone project before in her life. He could not be ignored or denied.
That is Jen, her mother whispered, voice shaking, the orphan from Tolnor. He came to court this.
How dare you come here to parley words with me?
Shatan's angry retort drowned out her mother's words.
Do you think yourself so well-read and so smart that you can bandy about law and principle like a court scholar? What is your name? What is your rank?
My name is Jen. I was a serf from Tolnor, and am now apprenticed to become a dark guard.
Shatan laughed maniacally.
A serf? A serf? Since when do Tolnorians put swords into the hands of serfs, or let them in the company of high-bred society? You forget your place, peasant. In case you are too daft to understand the point of this assembly, I am Shatan Cairn, noble-born and holy-born, and you've no more right to speak to me than a mutt. In a few weeks my father will make you and all your countrymen slaves.
I am what I am, said Jen, and the law is what the law is, and I am no slave yet. Seeking to bed the Shalane before your marriage is an insult to this court and the principles of the church. Serfs, commoners, and even the male slaves in your country have the right to challenge, and so do I. It would be wrong in the sight of God if I did not.
Some in the crowd demanded the First Mother do something to silence Jen and remove him. The Shalane felt her mother's hand tighten around hers as she stood tall and ignored them. The Shalane's heart broke, and the walls of defiance that had so easily crumbled at the Blessed One's insistence rose again, fixed with a stronger mortar. She silently thanked Jen for the return of her dignity, however brief, though she pitied him. As a commoner, he was probably ignorant of the death made flesh that he would face. The Shalane stared at Jen, hoping to imprint his face in her mind as a reminder to herself of conviction and courage.
Well,
the Blessed One said, silencing the crowd with his hand and a sudden light tone.
Combat you shall have, but we will do things as they are done in my country and soon yours. In my country, what you are doing now is called a challenge of possession. The Shalane is, I think all would agree, mine, and bound to obey me. For you to challenge my possession of her, someone must second your challenge for it to be of any effect. Of course, you're learned enough to know that, right? Is there anyone here who would second the motion of this peon? How about you, Dayson? You're the personal guard of her ladyship and this peasant's countryman. Will you second and stand with Jen against the wishes of your saviour?
No, your greatness, Dayson said, lowering his eyes and bowing. I will not oppose the will of the Blessed One.
The Shalane frowned.
There's a good man. Anyone else?
He turned to Jaren.
How about you?
Jaren regarded the finger pointing at his chest. He fought a war within himself for but a moment, and then his eyes cleared and he stood erect.
I will second.
Very well, the Blessed One accepted flippantly. The High Protector will act as judge. Where is he?
I am here.
Regent Ogbeth rose from a table near the dais and stepped forward. He walked with a limp, but was still every inch the soldier he had been in his youth. Close-cropped grey hair stuck out from an angular head that terminated in a powerful square jaw.
You seem to know the rules, boy,
the regent said, and the Shalane could sense a hint of pride in the older man's eyes.
What are your terms?
No, no, no,
Shatan interrupted.
In a challenge of possession, and the rules are quite simple. If he wins, she is his. If I win, she is mine, and she must obey.
But, my lord, the regent said, face concerned, if he wins,
Shatan laughed.
He won't! I name Cormith my champion in this matter.
The Blessed One was extraordinarily pleased with himself, and approached Jen, who matched his gaze with an expression of complete disinterestedness. Shatan pointed a finger at Jen's chest.
And you ought to know, my dear serf, that Cormith has killed more people than you have hairs on your head. If you're a fighter, you undoubtedly know of Torbrand Cairn, my father.
Jen only inclined his head in the affirmative as a response.
Torbrand trained him. I anticipate seeing your blood on the floor very soon. Let's get this over with.
Shatan waved Jen off dismissively and returned to his seat.
Then let the challenge by combat begin,
Ogbeth announced solemnly and a little sadly.
By our custom, each fighter has the right to seek a blessing before the fight starts.
Do either of you wish it?
Cormyth declined, but Jen accepted. Prelate Obelard made his way from the back of the assembly, dressed in the white robes of his office. A pure man in a simple brown habit followed him. Obelard whispered something to Jen and ordered him to kneel. Jen complied as the pure man pulled a vial from his cloak and anointed Jen's bowed head with oil.
"In the name of the most holy Elder Loth," he intoned gravely, placing his hand upon Jen's head, "I seal upon you the victory in this matter if your cause be honourable and just. If your cause be in fault, then I seal your doom and prepare your soul against your death."
Obelard extended a hand to help Jen rise.
"Get on with it,"
Shatan yelled impatiently.
"Eurogothians make such a complicated mess of everything." "Very well," Regent Ogbith said. "The match is to the death. Prepare yourselves and begin on my signal."
Jaren crossed quickly to Jen and Regent Ogbith held up. Shatan threw his hands up at this further delay. The Shalane could just hear Jaren's words above the fading noise of the crowd.
"Let me face him, Jen. Name me your champion, and I shall do it. You don't have the training to beat Cormyth. He is skilled beyond your imagining and has killed men with more experience than you have. Only I have a chance. Let me fight."
Behind the logic of the plea, the Shalane could hear the desire for absolution. He felt that he should have raised the challenge.
"You do not know me," Jen replied, removing his coat and shirt and tossing them on the floor. "I will fight. The challenge is mine."
"Then, Elder Loth, rest your soul. You are a dead man. A foolish dead man."
Jaren strode away angrily and returned to his post. If the bitter rebuke hurt Jen, he did not show it. Cormyth and Jen, both stripped to the waist, stood at the foot of the dais, facing each other. Each was a perfect form of sculpted muscle and flesh, though Cormyth, the taller and heavier. Servants pushed tables back at Ogbeth's instruction to allow room for the fight. So great was Cormyth's reputation that no one bothered to place wagers on who the winner might be. Captain Tolbrook, Jen's master, spoke a few words to his apprentice, but Jen's attention was so firmly locked upon his opponent that he gave no sign that he acknowledged Tolbrook's advice.
"Finish him quickly, Cormyth. No playing around this time," Shatan ordered brightly. "I've an engagement with the most beautiful woman that ever lived, after all."
Some laughed at the quip. Cormyth just smiled.
"It should not take long, Highness. He's but an apprentice, though he's got some muscle on him. Jaren would have proved a better match. There shall be little sport, I fear."
The Shalane marvelled at Jen's complacency. Perhaps he simply did not understand whom he was facing, for there was no fear, nervousness, or even healthy respect for his opponent in his demeanour. Regent Ogbith stepped back onto the dais and turned to the crowd.
"The challenge is agreed upon. Both parties are bound to honour its terms, as witnessed by me, Harrick Ogbith, Regent and High Protector of Rugoth. Let no man interfere till the challenge is resolved by death. You may begin."
The Shalane gripped her mother's hand, and her mother clutched hers tightly in return. As much as the Shalane wanted to turn from the awful scene that she knew would result in the butchery of the one man who had the courage to stand for her against a prophetic icon, she could not. Cormyth strode forward, playfully swinging his sword at Jen, who easily blocked the strokes. Cormyth laughed.
"Well," he said, turning to the audience with a broad grin, "at least he can block a few lazy swings."
The Blessed One laughed, and the crowd followed suit.
"Let's see," Cormyth continued, "if he can land one on me, shall we? Come on, lad, take a swing. I promise not to hurt you too badly. Yet."
And then Jen made him pay for his arrogance. With speed the Shalane didn't think possible, Jen laid into Cormyth with a vicious all-out frontal attack. Cormyth's look of teasing mirth dissolved into one of surprise and fear as Jen drove him back in a line, ending a furious series of humming overhand strokes with a crushing kick to the midsection that slammed Cormyth's lower back into the edge of a heavy oak table. Cormyth's breath exploded from his chest and he grunted in pain, barely recovering enough to duck a wicked slash that would have sent his head skidding across the table. Disbelief registered on every face. Cormyth, all hauteur aside, smoothed his features into the same emotionless calm as Jen's. Then the battle began in earnest. Blades,
were blurs of reflected light as stroke and counterstroke made a quick, irregular beat to which the fighters danced. Inches determined the difference between life and death, sharp edges dodged by less than the breadth of a finger. Cormith sought to use his greater mass to good advantage by wearing Jen down with heavy, powerful strokes. Jen countered with inhuman quickness, seeking to gain advantage of Cormith's injury by forcing him to twist his body. The entire hall went silent, as it became clear that the fight was not going to be won easily by either side. The Blessed One watched with rapt attention, and the Shalane saw that Jaren's anger had faded, replaced by hope. She barely noticed that Fenner had come to her side, face aglow with girlish admiration.
"Did I not tell you, Shalane?" Fenner whispered as the men strove with each other. "There is no one like him."
The Shalane could only agree. What the Shalane had thought was exaggeration from an enamoured girl proved instead to be the truth. Jen fought masterfully, facing down an experienced killer in a way that could only be described as violently beautiful. They strove intensely for several minutes, neither tiring nor backing away. As time wore on, the Shalane could tell that each was starting to take chances in hopes of catching the other off guard for the split second it would take to kill. The pace slackened as strategy, rather than pure physical might or speed, came into play. And it was here, the Shalane surmised, that Cormith had the advantage, for Jen was young and surely less experienced. Still the youth held his own until Cormith managed to slice him across his upper chest. Fenner's face fell, and the Shalane trembled. Her mother's grip tightened painfully. Cormith offered no gloating remark, and Jen showed no sign of discomfort, though the Shalane knew a wound so severe had to weaken him. The Blessed One half rose up from his seat, a smile coming to his lips, while Jaren bowed his head momentarily, perhaps in prayer. Jen appeared to tire, his parries coming slower, Cormith's blade inching ever closer. Blood ran down Jen's chest as Cormith drove him backward. The Blessed One stood, sensing victory. But as Cormith came down with a heavy overhand blow, Jen's speed suddenly returned as he threw aside his feigned exhaustion and pain. Cormith tried to hold his stroke up as Jen dodged away, but before he could rein in his errant swing, Jen hammered him in the side of the head with his sword hilt, cracking the left side of his skull. Cormith crumpled to the ground, landing on all fours and dropping his sword. Jen waited as the dazed, injured man scooted about, wheezing and feeling around for his sword. As soon as Cormith laid his hand on the blade, Jen beheaded him. The Blessed One yelled in rage, slamming his fists down upon the table. Jen turned, bleeding but calm. Extending his sword toward the Shalane, he bowed. After wiping his blade clean with Cormith's discarded shirt, he resheathed his weapon and returned to stand at attention with the other apprentices, as if nothing had happened. Regent Ogbith stepped onto the dais with a face that barely checked the glee that threatened to flood from it.
"Let it be published abroad. The Jen has won the challenge. According to Ogmerian custom, the Shalane is now in Jen's possession, and his right to her cannot be challenged for at least 1 year from this day. Is that correct, Highness?"
Shatan was too incensed to reply.
"I shall take it then that that is correct. The matter is concluded."
No one dared applaud. The dark guard in charge of Jen's training gaped at him with a mixture of admiration and wonder, as did his fellow apprentices. The Shalane wept silently, her mother and Fenner sharing her joy. Jaren smiled grandly, while Dayson shook his head in amazement. Moving away from her companions, the Shalane walked across the dais to stand in front of her defender, collecting the shirt and coat he had cast aside before the fight. Now she wished that her veil could be torn away so that he could see how she felt, for no words could describe it. She felt reborn.
"You shall not heal him," the Blessed One thundered at her. "Give Cormith that much respect. I forbid you to heal him."
Ignoring the order, the Shalane extended her hand and laid it upon the wound. His blood wet her fingers and stained the cuff of her sleeve as she concentrated. After several moments, the cut healed so completely that only the blood drying upon Jen's chest and the Shalane's hand and sleeve suggested that a wound had ever been there. The Shalane tried to read Jen's face, but as before, it was indecipherable.
"Thank you," she said, leaning close to give him his clothing, whispering so that none could hear but him. A slight smile in his eyes was all he answered, and it was enough.
"This is not the end of this," the Blessed One yelled. "You will regret what you've done, serf. This I swear."
Chatan departed rapidly, leaving a chattering throng in his wake. Arguments erupted, and the hall crescendoed instantly from silence to chaos. The Dark Guard hurried to their apprentices as Jaren, Fenner, and the First Mother joined her daughter in front of Jen. "We need to remove the Shalane from the hall, Your Highness," Jaren remarked, nodding toward the unruly crowd. "Yes, take the Shalane to her apartments immediately. Accompany them, Fenner, and see to her comfort. Jen, you will come with me in a few moments. I must do what I can here before I speak with you. Be wary. You are in more danger than you know." The First Mother hasted away, ordering the removal of Cormith's body and trying to soothe the assembly.
"Well done, Jen," Volney said, coming near. "It is an honour to serve with you."
The other apprentices, excepting the Ogmarians, congratulated him quietly as the First Mother dismissed the assembly. Tolbrook approached Jen, face disquieted, signalling for him to follow.
"No, Captain," the First Mother spoke up, walking over quickly. "I need to talk to this one. Now."